Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, July 11th, 2002. Today's session is entitled The Giving Bowl and is hosted by Joe, Mimi, and Linnea Arnett. This is session ARJ 2002-06. Let's listen in.
Food, maybe whether you grow it or if, since this book deals with a concern for hunger relief, then if you have any experience with that. And I grow my own, as many of my own vegetables as I can, which is limited since I live on the other side of the mountains. That's my relationship.
I'm Linnea Arnett, and I'm from Bothell, Washington, and I grow broccoli.
All right, and I'm Joe Arnett, and I'm also from Bothell, Washington, or I live there. I've lived all over the country, and I found that, I guess I should say first that my relationship with food and hunger is a very a serious matter, I guess. I'm a little even embarrassed to take part in this. Mimi said she would do it because I get almost emotional when I think about it. So it's kind of a warning because that's not my intention, but sometimes that's what happens. And I don't really understand why. I've never been hungry myself, really. I've lived in the lap of plenty. And but I have found that when I've been most active in the church or most involved in the church, and my relationship with the church has been sort of cyclic, I feel much more grounded in it now, much more permanent. But when I've become more active in the church, this issue of food and hunger has always come up for me as something that I felt called to do some work in. So, and as far as growing food, I've had two sort of projects way back in the past, and both of them I was trying to grow food for hunger relief on some level. There's, minuscule level, and probably the product of it was more than anything consciousness raising about just growing food. And so we try to grow our own food. We used to live in a rural community where we grew a lot of food and sold it in a farmer's market. And now we live in a city or suburban area, so we grow our own vegetables as we can, but we're not actually involved in producing food. But this little book that our sort of session is around was after September 11th, when the war in Afghanistan started, we found ourselves very concerned about the people who are suffering because of that on all sides. But so we felt we wanted to respond, and we tried to respond in a very little way, and that's what the story is about. So.
Give me 1 second to come. I'll tell for both of us. This is my daughter, Linnea. My name is Melanie Wallendorf. We live in Tucson, Arizona, which is not a very hospitable climate for growing many foods. But we have a garden where we grow a few tomatoes and some herbs with a gray water system in the laundry. Our church, which is located right in the center of Tucson, a Methodist, has a program of feeding and sheltering hungry homeless men during the winter months, and we have lots of such people who come to warm weather climates during that time. And there's another kind of hunger that we feed in that program, and that is that we have a literacy program that goes along with it. And Linnea and I, this last winter, had the pleasure of serving breakfast to 25 guests at that program.
I'm from Mount Vernon, Washington, and our church also has a program. We serve meals at the local homeless shelter and help with that, prepare it, and then we bring it there and serve it also. And I grow some vegetables in my garden. Actually, some years I grow a lot of them, it just depends. This year, because I had to come up here for 3 weeks, I couldn't really do too much. My husband is in charge, and I don't know how he tending to them. Well, I have a lot of food in my garden, and I can that, and I have a lot of, I enjoy my lunch doing that.
I'm Mary Gwinnell. I'm from Redmond, Washington, and I raise herbs, I guess, and raspberries and strawberries and a few little vegetables. But our church also does the men's shelter that rotates around the east side churches. So during that time, when the men are staying in the basement at night, that I help with meals and that and stuff. And then I also do sandwiches for the Compass Center. So.
I'm Betty Lindstrom. I'm from Minnesota. And I know the feeling of going to bed not hungry for hunger pangs, but from hungry for something besides root veggies and cornbread. Mm-hmm. We moved from South Dakota in 1925, and we got here the 7th of July in Minnesota. And it was no too late to have anything but rutabagas. And they were delicious. But you know how kids revile at rutabagas? And we did not have a cow yet then. So milk was very, very scarce. And I remember the Easter after that, the Easter in 26. A friend of ours had moved from South Dakota to Minnesota, and that's how come we got here. Got us an oatmeal box full of eggs. You never saw five kids any happier than we were when we got eggs for Easter. I now have two tomato plants and a and one green pepper plant. I hope someone's watering them while I'm gone.
I'm Richard Peterson. I'm from Evanston, Illinois, which is north of Chicago. I grew up in the city of Chicago. We didn't even have our own home, so we didn't have any land to even make a garden and so forth. So I have no experience in that at all. Over the last 8 years, however, I've been the coordinator of a Sunday soup kitchen at Evanston. So I line up all the various organizations to serve once a week at the Sunday soup kitchen. We serve approximately 90 people per Sunday. And up until the last, probably 4 years ago, I used to be the coordinator for our church, too. We used to do it bi-monthly, so I would line up all the people to donate food, to serve the food as well. So that's probably my basic involvement with the hunger.
Hi, I'm Linnea Peterson, and I'm from Evanston, Illinois, too. And in the front of our house, we have a little thing of strawberries that me and my sister.
Hi, it's Amy Peterson, and mine's like the same.
I'm Lois Rock Peterson, and he failed to mention when the Sunday Soup Kitchen was just getting started, the, at least two Sundays when we were making peanut butter jelly sandwiches at our very small kitchen table for, we made 200 that day. I grew up on a farm in Ohio, and we grew everything, and I worked a lot in the garden. We had our own eggs and chickens and, pork and everything. And I don't do anything like that anymore. I make jam, but I don't have any hospitable soil in my backyard at all to deal with. But it's an interesting journey, especially seeing the urban side and living in, and seeing the people that don't have food. And it's interesting hearing your story. My mom talked about, she grew up in the Depression, and they were poor, but she said, but we weren't that poor. We always had enough food. So obviously she knew people who didn't. They lived on a farm. They could always grow their own food. But she was always very proud of the fact that they never went very hungry. I think it was though they got tired of fried egg sandwiches and no lunch boxes. So they were jealous in the neighborhood had bologna.
I'm Stephanie Rubin, and from Raleigh, North Carolina. And right now, I always have enjoyed growing things. I love to watch things grow. And I love to plant, and I love to watch things grow. And I've had a garden in the past, but my job, I have a very busy job, and I'm very involved in music at my church, and I'm by myself now. So I don't really have enough time to grow a lot right now, but he had great fig bushes in my backyard that I planted. And I love to go out in the morning and just pick the fruit and eat it, you know. And I like that idea of being able to, you know, just have things out and around, you know, that you can pick and eat and stuff like that. But I love to watch things grow. And I've been involved at, we have a number in Raleigh's a big city, so we have a lot of things to help people that are hungry and don't have enough food. And we have soup kitchens and that sort of thing, and food bank. And I have been involved in doing some things with that. And our church, my church, makes food bags on a regular basis. And I always designate a part of my offering for food bags. I'm always conscious of, although I've never ever gone hungry, I'm always conscious of that for some reason or other, that there are people that, that are hungry. So anyway.
Beverly Baseman from Wilmer, Minnesota. And I too grew up on a farm, but I don't do anything with growing food right now. But my my dad was a Swedish immigrant, and I heard his hunger stories because that's why they came here, because of lack of food. And but he also managed a commercial canning company. So he saw that end of the food industry with him. But we were never without food because we lived on a farm. But I have to say this, there always will be one share. There always seemed to be someone at our table besides just our family. And our church is involved with Bloomer Age Food Shelf, but as far as local support things.
Thank you all for sharing. Get back to our bowl story. We thought we'd bring a bowl, this one that Joe's working on. And I think right after September 11th, we were separated a little bit by the distance in the country. Joe was in Minnesota doing work, and so he couldn't come home as planned. He had to wait it out until the airports opened. And when we got back together as a family, we started lighting a candle, sort of as we usually did it on Sundays, you know. But then we just started every night, and we had this Holden Baker bowl on our table, and it's supposed to remain empty, you know. And it was there. It might have actually been next to the table, but anyway, we'd light the candle, and then Joe. Said, well, why don't we see what's in our pockets and start putting, you know, kind of our leftover change at the end of the day in this bowl. And because he felt a need to, and I did too, somehow respond, especially once when we started bombing in Afghanistan. Somehow, some relief agency or something needed to respond to this. And we knew that there were people not only because of September 11th, but just it sort of I think woke us up again to that we're part of this larger whole and that there are people hungry. So we started putting in whatever change we had every evening when we'd light our candle. And I remember once Linnea put in the dollar that she got from losing her tooth. She had a tooth fairy gave it to her, and she put it in the bowl. Oh, a Sacagawea dollar it was, which was very special. So that went into the bowl. And then Linnea and I left on a little trip to see my mother. And when we came back a week later, Joe, well, I didn't know about it, but he and Linnea, he had written this, and they talked about what illustrations would be appropriate. And I would sort of go to my yoga class, and they would secretly do this. So we'd like to share it with you now. It's presented to me on my birthday. And it's called The Giving Bowl by Papa Joe and Linnea Arnett. Let me start. The Giving Bowl. The giving bowl is a new tradition in my family, and this is the story about how it started. When we sit down for dinner, we talk to each other about what we are thankful for. It's our way of saying grace. In some families, people close their eyes and one person says a prayer, and then everyone says, Amen. We do that at my grandmother's house. At my friend's house, we hold hands and close our eyes and sit quiet for a minute. People have many different traditions, and at most meals, we just sit down and eat. But we're always glad to have food, even if we don't say anything.
At dinner, when we talk about what we are thankful for, Papa starts because I asked him to. Mama is next, and then it is my turn. I am always thankful for the dinner. Sometimes I think of other things too, like having a friend to play with or having two sweet kittens. There are also things that I am not thankful for, like when the boys at school run through our gates. My friend lies to me. But the thing that we are not thankful for that gave us the idea for our new tradition is that there is a war going on. We hear about people who don't have any food, and we are not thankful for that. My papa said that he had a tradition when there was another war, before I was born, of lighting a candle at dinner. He did it to remember the people who were suffering because of the war. A woman talking in a big church gave him the idea, and he thought it was a good one, and so he did it too. After a while, the candle especially reminded him about the people who were hungry, and we think about that now too. It is a strange feeling to think about people going hungry when we have so much. We wish we could do something about it, but a lot of people...
Okay, she wants to show you the part about her kittens.
But a lot of the people who are hungry are far away. We would be glad to share but that is not practical.
I'll read a little bit. No? When the new war started, we didn't feel good. Papa got out an old candle holder that had belonged to my great-grandmother, and we lit a candle to remind us about the people who are hungry. But we didn't want to stop. We didn't want to just feel sorry. We wanted to do something to help. Our new tradition started because of that feeling. With the help of the special bowl we got last summer in Golden Village. That is a place in the mountains where people can go for a retreat. A potter there named John made some little bowls and said that they were beggar bowls. Beggars are people who go out with an empty bowl to ask for food. Some beggars aren't able to work, and some are just poor. Some beggars are monks who give away everything they have and live by begging so they can learn to be humble. Their empty bowls are a symbol that they need something that they can't give to themselves. The other people believe that giving food to the monks is good for themselves too.
So one night, we put the little empty baker's bowl on the table lit by the candle because they are both very special things to us. And that's when Papa got the idea for the new tradition. And there's the person. Is that a beggar? A monk.
That's a monk.
Of the baking bowl.
Papa said that we could think of the empty bowl as being for all the people in the world who are hungry. And that we could put a little money in the bowl whenever we ate, as if we were sharing our food with them. And that is just what we do. When the bowl starts to get full, we decide who to give the money to. We call it a giving bowl because it is a way to give to others. We
we give some of the money to the food bank in our old town, and we send some to organizations who feed hungry people all over the world. We have other ideas too. And part of our tradition is to try to find out how to help the most with the little amount of money we have to give. We usually put just a little money in the bowl at each meal, but even a little used in the right way can provide a lot of food. And some traditions last a long time. We can imagine tons of food coming out of the little living bowl on our table. If we used it for our whole life, it is amazing that such a small bowl could do that much. Some of the money goes for food right now for the people who are starving or are not able to get all of the food. All the food they need.
Some goes to buy seeds for farmers so they can get started again. There, you can read this part. You want to read that? Sometimes we put in more.
Sometimes we put in more if we have something extra. One time when I got a gold Sacagawea dollar from the Tooth Fairy, I put that in the bowl too. I went running out to tell Papa when he came home from work. He said that it was one of his proudest moments as a parent. A tradition is something we do together to remember or celebrate things that are important. Traditions are not things that you just think about. They are things that you do. When you light candles on a birthday cake or when a tooth falls out and you put it in a letter to the Tooth Fairy, these are traditions. Some traditions are very old, but sometimes you can start a new one or find a new one. And that's what we did. Papa says that if we ever need it, we can take money out of the bowl too. Because in this world, we all need each other. The giving bowl helps us remember.
That's the Tooth Fairy.
Hi, Jesus.
That's the end?
That's it. And then on the back, it shows the places that we can give to.
That we can give them out. That's basically, I think, what we had planned for the presentation. I told Barbara it would be short.
Yeah, I could say a little more too, because I mean, we're not posing as the experts. And some of you have done more for hunger relief than we have, and some of you have had more experience with actually growing food than we have. And as it said in there somewhere, part of our interest is to, first of all, try to understand why there is hunger in the world. Because we don't think that it has to be like that, or that it's right, or that, it's God's plan for us, or our own wishes for us. So that's number one. We'd like to know why are so many people in the world hungry? Because we believe they are. And so that's a big education. I mean, that's not a short, quick answer to that. We know some about what things that aren't the reasons, but we'd like to understand the causes for the second thing we're trying to understand is, well, what can we do about it? Our efforts seem so small, but, we felt we need to make a respond. It's not enough just to say, that's just how it is. So we're kind of seeking information, really, from you and from anyone. But what do you think? Why is there hunger in the world? And number two, what can we do about it? How can we respond?
I think some of it is neglect, but not all of it. How many of you in your areas have food shelves? We do in our church.
Food shelves?
Food shelf.
Mm-hmm. Where you bring candies?
We have very good response. The school children, we have a well, for a small town, it's a big school because they come from outlying areas. And my, how those students, in the spring especially, or in the fall, now Thanksgiving time, for instance, we bring things to church and put them in boxes and bags, and it goes to the food shelf. And those that want to or can give money, because then we can buy meat for them, hamburgers, the meat that they buy. Mm. And that's in a freezer there in church. And it is a big response to it. I've seen some abuse of it, and I guess no matter what you try, that someone will make abuse of it.
But yeah.
It's really a wonderful thing.
And who are the people that mostly benefit by that? The people in your parish, or?
Oh, no, not our parish so much.
The people in the town?
I don't think there are any in our parish that are wanting, that I know of anyway. But there are people in town who have children, quite a few children, they can't really take care of them all. And mm-hmm. It's just, as I say, there is some abuse, I can say that, but by and large, it's much more good than bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's one tradition that's dropped away that I recall from being a child, and that was a tradition around Halloween. Around Halloween, we would all decorate milk cartons and go around and get pennies and send those to UNICEF. And one of the things that irritates me about that holiday now is that I don't see that, and it's so much about, you know, give to me, and give to me the kind of food that doesn't sustain us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's much of a way to eliminate that, but I think having as a companion that gathering of coins it's sad to me that it's dropped away. Although UNICEF, I think, still makes it possible for people to participate.
They make those boxes. Mm-hmm.
But it's just
the response isn't like it was when we were kids and everybody did it.
I don't think in Seattle or in response for trick-or-treaters even going out for candy. I mean, we used to, in my neighborhood, get 25 to 30, and I got two last year. In the last few years, it's been two or three kids, and those are just like the ones that live on my street.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a parent, I wouldn't want to send my child out.
But children get sent to shopping malls, and so I think an inversion mm-hmm. there would be to say, right. All right, instead of just providing the candy to get kids to the mall, how about some coins from someone?
That sounds like something could be revised again.
Because I think the generation of parents who recall that would be supportive of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody out west does like a 30-hour famine with the youth. We do that in the Raleigh area.
In your congregation, you do a 30-hour?
With our youth in the area. So, and I usually am involved in that because I'm involved in so much with youth in my church, with my choirs and stuff. But they fast for 30 hours, and while they're fasting, they juice fast is what they do. And while they're fasting, they do some community service, and they become more aware of the hunger problems in the world, and then it also gives them an experience of what it's like, mm-hmm. you know, to go without food for a while. And I think Linnea is certainly an example of a person that, you know, we are going to be counting on to try to continue, you know, this thought that although we're so blessed and we need to be remembering of that we also need to reach out to other people.
Yeah.
And the 30-hour fast does a really good job with that. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of places, like, you know, I think for years I've been supporting, you know, Save the Children. I've sponsored a child. There are children in Haiti that, you know, that you can do that with, and they use the money quite well, I think. And again, it's not a huge thing, but it is something you can do that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
for a
huge difference to the recipient.
And there's the a friend of mine brought up the Heifer Project.
Yes,
which is really great, and I don't think it takes that much, really.
Donate to the Heifer program, and you know, in lieu of, they sometimes parents like to give me things at the end of the year. That was probably one of the nicest gifts I think I've gotten, was somebody giving that, you know, and that's a really neat thing to do, I think.
Yeah.
When I was Sunday school superintendent, my husband built a little church to represent our church, and it was a bank, and the children, everyone that had a birthday put their pennies in, of course, and lots of times it was more than pennies. Even we adults put money in for our birthdays, and we supported a little Christian children's fund. We supported a child. Mm-hmm. We got their picture, we got letters from them.
Right.
And but when I was no longer superintendent, it kind of fell away. They don't do it, but they do a lot of good things.
Heifer Project. Well, the project is interesting because that's more of a addressing some of the root causes instead of shipping food around.
Yeah.
And it, the one, I know that there's some classes at my school that I work at have been involved in raising money, which is kind of ironic. It's all, you know, Krispy Kreme donuts and have fake sales. But then they use the money to, you know, send to Heifer International.
Yeah.
But that, and the kids have learned that, the fourth graders did it, so it's an older bunch, but they learned a little bit about the economics of maybe, you know, why people in South America are growing flowers instead of growing their own food, because we have a big market for cheap flowers in our country.
Yeah.
It all kind of plays in there.
That's a good idea. One of the, my goals for this is to have kind of a, like a consumer's report on aid relief agencies. Mm-hmm. So that, and because most of us don't have the time really to study the whole issue and who's the best place to give, to have some assessment. I don't know if anybody is aware of anything like that. But
there's something that's done that just measures the fraction of dollars used for administrative expense compared to the fractions in services.
Where is that? Do you know where that would be available?
No, but I'll check around. I see that published on different.
That's what I've been kind of looking for. I haven't encountered it, but I'm sure
that,
it's out there.
That doesn't address the question of how effective the service delivery is. It's only the fraction of the dollar that goes to administration as compared. And obviously, someone needs to go to administration to be effective with that.
Right.
I keep being told that ENCA World Hunger is the most effective organization.
Which one?
ENCA World Hunger.
ELC?
Yeah.
Well, we, our church gives to that always. We have a special offering. And there's envelopes in the back of our pews when visitors come. They pick them up and often we give offerings.
I've heard that same thing. That's it. Yeah, it's been the cost of our absolutely minimal.
Lutheran World Relief is one of the biggest funnels of outside aid out of this country from the Lutheran churches. Mm-hmm. Another thing that our family's got involved in the Church World Service, which is we have a crop walk once a year that raises money to go overseas, and that's through Church World Services, which is a ecumenical agency, a Christian agency, but it's made up of all sorts of faiths, really, that raises money for, at various times in October, all these walks occur across the country and raise food, and raise money for food, directly for food. And that agency has a very good record of very low administrative costs, because just about everything is a volunteer position there. So we raise, our North Shore crop walk raises probably about $30,000 a year, but there's a lot of other walks that make much more than ours.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
I try to do stuff with Christian. I'm the Christian director at our church, and I try to do something each year that is an awareness thing for the kids. And one of the most interesting things that we've done, I think it was the fifth graders that I did with this thing. I actually divided the class in thirds, and I brought in a third of them got a little plate of brown rice, and a third of them got a glass, and I just, on the outside, wrote contaminated water.
And then a third of them I brought in a whole McDonald's meal, nice hamburger and fries and milk and cookie and everything randomly served. I didn't have them all clumped together because the purpose of it was the ones who got the McDonald's were supposed to share with the ones that maybe got brown rice and tea. And it was like, oh, you know, how did you pick who got it? Well, nobody picks who goes hungry. It's kind of a random. That's a pretty good visible one.
That would be a real, understanding the human emotions around it, seeing someone else so much. You're having a little less contaminated water.
They did that in Narnia today.
Yeah.
Oh, did they do that in Narnia?
You want to talk about it?
We put down napkins, and most of them said Asia or Africa, but me and my friend Kendall, I got the USA and she got Europe. And the USA and Europe got a whole bunch of this kind of trail mix. And then Asia and Africa only got a little bit. And so, me and my friend Kendall had to share with everybody. We shared, and that was because those Europe and the USA are kind of, they have lots of food, and Asia and Africa. And then we did some other things about hunger.
That's great. It's very appropriate today. It's hunger awareness. It wasn't, I don't think, planned on our part anyway. Be when we do this, but kind of fits in. I'll share one little more story with you just about this book because it's been an interesting. I brought a copy to a friend of mine who runs a boat that it's like an environmental education operation, and we do. Environmental education tours out on the San Juan Islands, very beautiful place, and we go out look at the wildflowers, and I'm fortunate enough once or twice a year to go out as ship's botanist, and we have a great time. And this year they had a gourmet chef who was the cook. He was an instructor in the culinary program at the local college, so we had this incredible food every meal. It was his first cruise, so he was just outdoing himself. And so my friend asked me to read the book. And so I thought, well, okay, you know, I can't say no. I feel like it's kind of, sort of some kind of responsibility. So I thought, well, at dinner time I'll read this book. And I didn't really think about it, but it had such an impact on me that we were appreciating food so much. You know, having this beautiful gourmet dinner and at that moment thinking about people who don't have anything. And I don't personally believe that the solution is that we have to deny ourselves. I mean, I kind of lean on the story of the loaves and the fishes and the feeding of the 5,000 as sort of a little bit of guidance that there's abundance, there's great abundance in the world, and the problem isn't that there's not enough food. But it was very poignant to be reading that story while people are eating this gourmet dinner. I didn't set that up. That's just how it happened.
Are any people here of Scandinavian descent?
Anybody not?
Anybody familiar with Ludacris? Well, a friend of mine in my church, the pastor's wife, said that the Scandinavians tell a story about the feeding of the 5,000 and the reason why there was so much fish left at the end is that everybody, it was Ludafisk.
That's a great story.
Well, in the food thing, too, the next time you pick up your Bible, go to Luke, and Jesus is always sitting down and eating.
Yeah.
The wonderful food stories, and just being here with the wonderful food we've had. And all the feeding of the 5,000 story, eating with sinners, and the great banquet. All these people were invited to a banquet by the man. They don't come, so they send out and round up the beggars and the people in the rows in the streets, and they come. And enjoy the banquet.
Yeah.
I just want to share one last story. I thought of when I was in Mexico,
the little boys that come around selling animal posters, the little bracelets, or I forget what he was selling, but this one little guy we kind of got to know, and he's darling, but so thin. And so one day we said, you know, would you like a new pair of shoes? What would your mom let you have a new pair of shoes? He goes, no, she'd sell them. You know, and we said, how about a new shirt if we get you a shirt? No, my mom's going to sell it. And I said, and he kept looking whenever he'd come to our table at our food, you know, because it was an outdoor cafe. So one day we said, why don't you just sit down? Would you like a sandwich? I'd like a sandwich, because we knew that his mother couldn't take away the sandwich. So we fed him. And I just remember the look on his face. I was just hoping that he wouldn't get in trouble, but he certainly got to eat the sandwich, and his mother couldn't take it away from him.
That's a great story. Yeah. I have another story, actually. Reminds, not to upstage you or steal your thunder, but maybe this will spark other stories. You know, stories are a great way of conveying information, sometimes more than all the factual stuff. But I remember a story about some people who were on a cruise. They're immigrating to the United States, and they're very poor. And they were down in the lowest deck, and they just had a little bit of food they'd managed to store. And they stored it away, you know, and then they would almost secretively share it amongst themselves. And they were very hungry. They only had a little bit of food. And they'd spent all their money for this ticket to get across. And they're hiding down there. And at some point, the people around them seemed to be eating better. And I don't know if they saw them eating or what, but at some point, several days into the voyage, way into the voyage, one of their sons was, for some reason, had to go up above. He was sick, or he had to go get something, or get a glass of water, find some water. They would run out of water. And he went upstairs, and he didn't come back. And finally, they went up to see what was he doing. And he was sitting upstairs, and he was eating all this food, like they're having this big meal. And they were just terrified that, you know, that that they had to, were supposed to pay for this food or something. And they came up to him, and they're sort of angry, like, what are you doing? We can't pay for this. And he says, no, you don't understand. This was part of the ticket. And it came with the ticket, so.
I do something else sometimes, too, that is just something you can do that's small, but may have an impact on people. I don't know if out west whether they do the same thing they do in the east, but they have a lot of people that stand on corners from time to time with signs and say that they're homeless or helpless. And I hesitate to give money, but what I often do is, I'm usually close to a food store. They'll say, you know, we'll work for food, or we'll work for, you know, money or whatever. I'll go in and I'll buy peanut butter, some cans of baked beans, some things like that, and go back out and give them a bag of food. Which I don't know, it's just something, and they always seem very grateful. And it's some small little thing that you can do. And, you know, if that's what you're really needing is food, then that's what you're really getting.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Because it's not going to turn into booze.
And sometimes I keep a bag in the car, you know, and because it's easy to keep those non-perishable things and do that. So.
That's a great idea. You know, another idea we had in our church, we haven't done it yet, but we've talked about it. You know, occasionally you encounter somebody that's on the street that's obviously homeless.
Occasionally
has a real impact. I drove through Reno, related to work one time, and Reno is all this glittering, you know, casinos, and there's a woman on the street who was obviously distraught, and she had a little cardboard sign, homeless and hungry. And I was on this ramp, and I really couldn't stop. There's, you know, an off ramp. And I was thinking, you know, I'd be very happy if I'm in a get a room for the night, or, I mean, it's not like a big deal to me to pay for that, but there's no real way for that to happen. And I was thinking, I asked one of our pastors if he could come up with a card that would have like the name and address of like relief places around town. So when you see somebody who really is obviously in need, and you can't really respond, you can't, maybe it's our choice, maybe it's not the right choice, but maybe we don't take them home. But maybe we could tell them where they could go to get help.
The conscious thing about that is done in Wilmer, anyway, Wilmer area, is that we had people coming to all the churches, and it was kind of hard to know how to help them if they come to each church. Mm-hmm. But we all, well, no, I don't know all the churches. Okay. A lot of the churches make a large donation to the Salvation Army, and then we say, go, that you can get the help of the Salvation Army, and then they get vouchers, whether it's for a motel room or a restaurant or a grocery store or whatever. And
so
they're
it's a central
kind of
place.
The vendor with the...
I think our church does the same thing. We belong to a Methodist church in Bothell. I think it's even handled through the police department. It's handled somewhere centrally in town.
There's an organization called Love Inc. And they are, I think, everybody in the United States. What they do is they keep a database of people who come and ask for food or shelter or utilities and so forth. And they will work with the churches and direct those people to the churches. So that they're kind of like a clearinghouse.
Oh, yeah.
And we're working with them, and it's working really well because they know the people in town, and they know the ones who all they do to go from church to church.
Yeah.
And they know the background of most people. So what we do, we first send them to Love Aid, where they do kind of an intake. And from there, it might be sent back to us. But that way, the different churches offer different things, that way people are much more likely to get what they need. Like some churches have a lot of clothes for pregnant women and babies, other churches have a food bank, and you know.
Oh, yeah.
So they're really informed of what's available. And like our church, in fact, have quite a bit of money, so we are able to help with utilities. Well, oftentimes we're the only place in town who does that, so they send those people to us, and it really is a great organization to work with as a church.
Yeah, that seems great. It sounds like a mm-hmm. parallel social situation. Mm-hmm. I think we're running out of time. I see some younger people kind of squirming. But
for sale?
They are. They're in the bookstore.
Are they?
Oh. And it's just mainly they're low cost. They're just to cover our cost. Mm-hmm. And then I think some of it goes to Holden.
Yeah, we give them to Holden for the cost of photocopying. Mm-hmm. And then they add their.
Yeah.
So I think it's $1.07. Anyway, thanks again.
Thank you.